Hi. We're here for the session, and in closed session we had two items. We spoke with our representatives from our negotiating team, and we've met with legal counsel regarding some anticipated litigation. The next item on our agenda will be approval of minutes.
I'll move approval of the minutes of the June 26, 2012 meeting.
Okay. A motion to approve. Do I have a second? Thank you. I have a first and a second. All those in favor?
We have to ask for any corrections.
Any corrections. Thank you.
Or any kind of discussion.
Is there any discussion?
Sorry.
No, hearing, hearing no discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Thank
one
you.
Extension.
Sorry. Thank you. And on the minutes... Do I hear a motion on the minutes of July 24th?
I'll move approval of the minutes of the meeting of July 24th, 2012.
Second.
Okay. We have a first and a second. Is there any discussion of the minutes? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. We have approval of the minutes. Thank you. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing no discussion. Any, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? And anybody?
Two abstentions.
I need to abstain? Okay, and there's two abstentions.
Because we don't have a quorum.
You need four votes to pass the minutes.
So then we'll move this.
If you want to table them,
yes,
to the next meeting.
Move that to the next. To the next meeting. Okay, next item on the agenda is official correspondence. We did have a letter from the Real Life Fellowship regarding the use of facilities. And let's see, next item. We're now here for public comment. And we have
Cammy Harris.
Hello. My name is Cammy Harris, and I live up the street here on Fixleany, and I am here representing my neighborhood tonight. Currently, the city is conducting a neighborhood traffic management study for the Fixleany-Lizzie traffic area, and we are very concerned with the dangerous traffic problem that occurs on our street every school morning. Evidently, many parents drive their students to school each day and drop them off at the district offices 9 to 32 miles per hour, where it's a legal limit of 25 miles per hour. Volume of traffic. The average traffic is 283 cars in a day, with about two-thirds of this traffic, or approximately 185 cars on average, traveling during the morning peak time of between 7:30 a.m. and 8 o'clock a.m. So in a half hour, we have two-thirds of the traffic going down the street with parents taking their kids to school. I have always heard that San Luis Coastal Unified School District's number one priority is the safety of all the students. Let's work together to solve this traffic safety issue. Thank you for hearing our concerns. And is there anybody from the district office that we will be able to hear from or get information back from in regards to our concerns and requests? Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. So, our next agenda item is the superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
Thank you.
At the moment, at the state budget and the issues that are facing us from the state, everything is revolving around the initiatives that happened in November. Up to this time, for the last month, nothing much has changed. The campaigns are ratcheting up, and the comments are getting more vitriolic as time passes. So we will continue to see additional comments. Essentially, the initiatives, there's two of them that affect education. One is the PTA Molly Munger, to the point where he has threatened that should the Molly Munger PTA initiative pass, he would simply withdraw the funds to transfer from Molly Munger's initiative to the state treasury via cuts to public education. So we're engaged in a war of words, and the outcome is yet to be determined. Right now, there's a majority of polled voters that are in favor of the governor's tax initiative. Not a majority of polled voters are in favor of the PTA Molly Munger. But we have a long time to go before November, and we'll see what the outcomes are. I think that tonight you guys have a recommendation to make on a support position for both of those initiatives, and I think that's the best thing that we can do at this moment in time.
Any questions from the board?
Yes. Mr. Miller, am I on?
You're on.
When last we spoke, I asked you if you had a sense of the polling where the governor's tax initiative was, and at that point in time you said it was running about 50-50?
Yeah, the governor's tax initiative, I think, was about 54% the last I heard in favor, and that was a positive thing on his polling. I don't know. Do you know anything new?
If I can, Marilyn.
Sure.
In the polling, with the initial question is obviously, are you in favor or against? But when they dig down to the second or third question, the Munger initiative is actually coming up to being equal or better, because they start understanding the governor's really doesn't put any money directly into public education. So it's all a matter on the polling of, do you look at the very top number or do you...
The voting date, two things happen. One, they get more informed, but the second one is they realize they're voting to increase taxes. It's basically a parcel tax slash funding issue for schools that they found a history and a trend is not to vote in favor of. There's more of a tendency to change your position as you get closer, usually against the proposal. So if that holds true, both initiatives are in grave danger of not passing. That puts education on a very, very rocky road for 12, 13, and future years. Tremendously destructive to the current the current position of education will change a lot if it doesn't pass.
Thank you very much. Any comments from the board? Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Miller. Dr. Prater?
Good evening, board, and welcome back from the summer break. How short that was. Regardless, I'd like to stand up here just for a moment to point some things out to you. First of all, I'd like to congratulate the board as a whole for remaining intact during this next election cycle. Especially, I'd like to congratulate trustees Millar, Eisendrath, Rogers, and Unger for their clean run to the election with no competition. And I believe that the ballots that are coming forward are very important to us, that we understand and speak to them. And so if I could, I'd like to just take a moment and sort of add to what Mr. Miller just spoke about. In particular, the Governor Brown's initiative is called the Schools and Local Public Protection Act of 2012. I'll say that one more time. The Schools and Local Public Protection Act of 2012. This measure is designed to provide additional revenues to the state general fund to avoid further cuts to public education. So they're going about it a little differently. Revenues would be part of the state's general fund budget and administered according to state law. New income taxes are heavily weighted toward highest earners. Sales tax increases would affect all taxpayers. This would not provide additional funding to schools. I'll say that one more time. This will not provide additional funding to schools. However, this would also provide a sort of a stabilization, if you will, to the K-14 infrastructure. So the K-12 schools would not see additional cuts, and community colleges would not as well. So for me, the governor's tax proposal, the Schools and Local Public Protection Act 2012, prevents us from things getting worse. And so there's some merit to that. The other initiative I wanted to speak to you in open session is the cost and influence. New taxes are broad-based, but high earners pay more. Separate and above any other state and local funding. It provides funding for retirement of state-level debt during the first 4 years. This initiative is clearly intended to provide supplemental funding for public education, K-12, to improve California's comparative standing with other states, so it would seem. And K-12 initiatives provides no funding for community colleges or the UC system. Now, the failure of either of these initiatives would result in significant reductions across the board in public education, additional cuts. In San Luis Coastal, it's an additional $457 per student or an additional $3.2 million hit to us if either one of these initiatives fail. It's a significant event, and there will be a lot of political expression as a result of that. So I would like to take a moment to discuss this. We have Board Policy 4119.25, and it states the Board of Education respects the right of school employees to engage in political discussions and activities on their own time and at their own expense. I'm on the right-hand side. That Kim, is there a way you could make that more legible? There we go. That's a lot better. If we even make that bigger, Kim, I'm on the top right. Employees shall make it clear that they are acting as individuals and not as representatives of the district. And our administrative regulations say employees have a general constitutional right to comment on matters of public concern. This right does not extend to using public resources to disseminate political views. No employee of the district or other person acting with the consent of a district employee shall use district funds, services, supplies, or equipment, or other public resources to urge the support or defeat of any ballot measure or candidate or to express specific political views. So if you could move that up a little bit, Kim, I'd like to talk about some of what the do's and don'ts might look like. This has been formally vetted by legal counsel, and I think it's worthy that we talk about this for a moment. Individuals may make factual statements about political measures or candidates, distribute political information personally only during non-work time, use break time or lunch periods to handle election work, being careful not to disrupt the work of others or instruction at the site, use the work site's union bulletin board to post union information on the election. Individuals may not, over to the right, express opinions for or against any political measures or candidates during contracted work hours. Use district mailboxes to distribute political flyers or letters. Display posters, banners, etc., for or against candidates or campaign measures on the work site, including parking areas or fields. Use district property, equipment, tools, or materials, including district. What I'd like to talk to is what everyone should do. Be respectful about opposing views and encourage everyone to vote. Now, I took the time to go through this, not because I didn't think you knew this. It's really just to be transparent about what I know will be the coming from a place of good intention. People want to protect our interests, especially those that impact students and their learning. And we see a lot at stake coming around the corner. And the media is going to pay a lot of attention for and against these measures in the coming months. We're going to spend quite a lot of time with our administrative team at all of our sites and our staff communicating these things. What makes this tricky is it seems like a fairly honest thing when someone says, are you for or against the tax initiatives? And they're looking for our opinions. And I think it's really important that we come up with factual statements. I was asked on KCBX radio, talk radio the other day, whether I supported the governor's tax proposal. And I thought of this. And so what I did was I said, well, the tax proposal prevents further depletion of our resources. So in that sense, there are some reasons why this is a positive thing. But I only spoke about the facts that I understood. So again, that's during work hours and representing us as a district. So I just wanted to go through that. Once again, congratulations to
our feelings about the initiatives. Is it possible for us to preface any comments with speaking as a private citizen?
Yeah, I attended a workshop at the County Office of Ed last spring. I believe Trustee Millar was there as well. And the attorney there urged us not to the attorney made it clear that we need to make clear that we're not on official business, that we're not acting as a trustee or an administrator of the district. And if you're clearly off work hours, if you're at a personal get-together and you're a citizen and not in official capacity, you can speak to that. But it's a tricky situation. So his urging was to remain factual, mm-hmm. And remain try to stay away from qualifying your statements.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I was interested in the individuals may not item there. The last bullet there, use time to perform any election activity, including filling out your own or assisting others with registration materials. It is, or it was, fairly common for government teachers dealing with seniors who are 18 years old, encourage them to register to vote, and sometimes providing them with registration materials. Has that changed? Is there some problem with that?
Yeah, these bullets here were developed.
Assume that when we teach our young citizens that one of the privileges of citizenship, and perhaps actually one of the duties of citizenship, is to register, become a registered voter, and vote in elections, that in of itself is, it's a political activity, yes, but it's something that we ought to encourage, not be afraid of.
Yeah, I think I do believe it is still consistent with our curriculum that we actually provide registration materials for 18-year-olds in our school setting, and so it sounds like an instructional activity. I think the admonition is not to be proposing any particular viewpoints. But it seems consistent with what we do, especially in our American government classes.
Any other questions from the board? Any questions from the public? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much. I'm going to come back. I'm going to try and figure out how to get there. Not that way. Yeah. We're coming up on the resolutions. I want to make sure that we're on the right ones. Kim, I think we'll be doing
8.01.
Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure I get this right. We'll do a roll call after each of these. Okay, thank you very much. The first resolution is on the signatures.
Okay. The education code requires that a majority of the members of the governing board sign all orders, warrants, or contracts, or that the governing board authorize an officer or employee of the district to.
Okay. And Mr. Sheffield.
I'll move that we adopt resolution number 011213, delegation of signature authority.
Okay, I have a first and a second. Any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
No.
Roll call.
Roll call. Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. And we're on our second resolution, and this will be on supporting the ballot measures. You don't see a resolution?
No, I mean, I looked at it earlier, but
okay.
Things are not opening on server or dock.
You might not be connected.
Well, I'm connected.
I've been losing connection. I didn't say that.
If the board would allow me, I'd like to be able to read this resolution, if that's okay with everybody. Thanks. This is a resolution to support the November 2012 ballot initiatives. One's the Schools and Local Public Safety Protection Act that we've heard about, and one is the Our Children, Our Future Local Schools and Early Education Investment Act. So the resolution reads, whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education is committed to making policy and financial decisions that enable the school district to provide quality educational programs and services for school-aged children of our community, and whereas the onset of the state's fiscal crisis in 2008, public schools statewide have experienced unprecedented funding reductions and apportionment deferrals totaling more than $20 billion, and whereas California public schools now rank 47th out of 50 states in per pupil spending, and whereas California public schools have laid off over 40,000 educators since 2008, and whereas the school funding crisis is at historic proportions, with 188 school districts certifying possible difficulty in meeting their financial obligations over the next 2 years, and whereas the 2012-2013 state budget is predicated on voter approval in November 2012 of the Schools and Local Public Safety Protection Act, without which schools will receive additional mid-year funding reductions that will result in additional cuts to services to students, and whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District has implemented significant cuts in order to stay fiscally solvent, totaling more than $5 million in the 2011-2012 budget year alone, and projecting similar cuts in 2012-2013. So whereas the California School Boards Association, representing nearly 1,000 school districts governing the boards and regional education agencies, supports the passage of both funding initiatives on November 2012 statewide, these being the Schools and Local Public Safety Protection Act and the Our Children, Our Future Local Schools and Early Education Investment Act, as each provides needed revenue to schools, and now therefore be it resolved that the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education joins CSBA and school districts around the state in supporting both funding measures and urges the legislature to work with CSBA and other educational leaders to identify long-term adequate funding solutions for the public schools, and be it further resolved that this body, the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, provides the passage of both Schools and Local Public Safety Protection Act and Our Children, Our Future Local Schools and Early Education Investment Act, because each provides revenue to the public schools. So at this point, is there a discussion?
I guess I'm a little confused as to why we would pass a resolution to support both measures. I know that the one measure will cost us $427 a student or whatever the number was, but I don't see any calculation as to what the PTA initiative would gain for us, leaving aside the governor's threat, which he may not be able to pull off anyway. So
what I can say is is that there is some data that we can receive to say what the Munger initiative or the PTA initiative would bring to San Luis Coastal. It's difficult because of the way the measure is laid out to know exactly how that would impact the whole, because it, the money goes directly to the individual sites based on their enrollment. So it's a complex story, which makes the initiative challenging to quantify, because none of those funds actually go to the district level for dissemination. They all go to the sites for the local decision of the site council to determine. The truth is the Munger PTA initiative will bring significant revenue enhancement to our district. It just is channeled in a unique way. That's not to say it won't work out well for us. It's the conditions, the complexities, the details underneath the surface haven't been fully vetted. But there's no doubt a district like San Luis Coastal will be supplemented significantly by that initiative if it were to pass. So in this particular scenario or this particular resolution, I believe that either one will benefit our district. Selfishly, the Munger initiative will bring in significant money to our district that we don't currently have. And the Brown initiative won't do that.
Right.
So in approving both, following the CSBA model, San Luis Coastal benefits under both conditions, in my mind.
We don't get harmed under Brown's, the governor's proposal, and we'll benefit under the Munger proposal. Not getting harmed is a form of benefit, I guess. And there may be too many unknowns, but are we concerned about a coordinated management of the money if it's going to individual site council, having been a veteran of site council? We didn't really have any money to spend, so.
And I'm a veteran of site council work myself, and I would be up for that challenge. But that's only a piece of the struggle under the initiative, the Molly Munger PTA initiative. But I think that's a much better scenario for us financially, even though it brings programmatic challenges. I would really have to sit with the board and work through if that were to pass. But in the polls, the Munger PTA initiative isn't showing nearly as well as the Brown initiative. And I just I can provide more of the details and data to you at the next board meeting, if you'd like. I just don't have that with me tonight.
Thank you. Eric, would you mind just being a little closer to the Munger PTA initiative? There's two things that are very exciting about it. If you Google our children, our future, it will take you to a website where there's actually a calculator, and you can actually put in the name of the school. So I put in Paso Robles High School. Paso Robles High School would instantly get over $1.5 million just to that high school, and so on throughout the state and throughout our county. And within the Munger Initiative, there is a section that says actually this, the money does stop at the school board with direction to the sites and help it at looking at it. So that's a little bit of factual stuff, and I'll stop there. So, any other discussion?
Seems to me, in either case, revenues are generated for our district. So, well, in the case of the governors, we would experience less or no cuts. So, to me, I mean, I can see either one of them seems beneficial. So, I will move approval of Resolution 021213, which supports ballot propositions 30 and 38.
I'll second that.
We have a first and a second on the resolution. Is there any further discussion? Nope. Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor? I'm sorry, there.
And I'm sorry, I was distracted. So who is my second? Jim?
Jim.
Okay, thank you. So, Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
No.
Passes. Thank you.
We're going to move on to our public hearing. This is on the agreement with the School Employees International Union. And Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, we have come to an agreement with our SEIU employees, and that will be coming to the board later in the agenda. In this case, with this agreement, there really is no monetary issues involved, but as part of the process and in terms of the agreement, we do want to open it up to the public for them to have any say or ask any questions.
So at this time, I'd like to open the public hearing. Is there anybody that has any comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the board. And now we move on to the discussion of the grand jury report, and I think Dr. Prater.
As you know, the county, the San Luis Obispo County Grand Jury issued a study and a report stemming from the negative declaration of the Paso Robles Unified School District. And as a result, the grand jury decided to investigate all the districts in our county and look at specifically the financial condition of each of the school districts in our county. And they issued a report over the summer, and the grand jury basically came up with recommendations for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. And I'm presenting it to you tonight in a Cliff Note version so that we're crystal clear on all the facts pertaining to the study. Each governing board in the county, this came from the study, the grand jury report, that each governing board in the county should establish a policy requiring new board members to attend a minimum of 2 days of education on school district budgeting and financial oversight. The second bullet, or the second point, was that each governing board should also require follow-up training for board members annually, for all board members annually. It should be noted that the grand jury does not have authority to carry out these recommendations or to implement them, force us to implement them. Nevertheless, they have requested a response from us in three conditions, and the conditions are that we agree, we partially agree, or we disagree. And each district has been given a set of requests to respond. Our governing board is required to respond by September 24th to address findings 1, 2, 3, and 8, along with the 2 points above, which I just mentioned in terms of training. Finding 1 was that they felt that the primary responsibility of the governing board is financial oversight and accountability. Finding 2 was that the governing board members overseeing the county's 10 districts are offered education and training in school district budgeting and financial oversight. In their findings, they felt that it was seldom taken advantage of. You can imagine our findings on that, our own response to that, because I know that every board member, every trustee in San Luis Coastal has, in fact, taken advantage of that. But nevertheless, I will continue. Finding three was that all 10 school districts in San Luis County, San Luis Obispo County, are currently in deficit spending. In other words, our expenditures exceed our revenues. It should not come as a surprise, given the fact that our funding sources are dried up and we're sending money back to the state. Finding eight, three basic aid districts, Cayucas Coast and San Luis Coastal, are expected to weather the current state budget crisis, with minimal disruption to their educational program. I vehemently have a disagreement with that, but I'm not writing we're not writing it now, I'm just sharing this. After meeting with the county superintendent of schools, along with the other superintendents in the county, we agreed on a basic framework to have a countywide response, basic framework to ensure that our findings were somewhat in alignment. Our responses to each of the findings must reflect agreement, partial agreement, or disagreement with supporting rationale. My suggestion is to work with the board president and clerk on a detailed response to the requests to be shared with the board in open session on September 4th, which is our next board meeting, for feedback and approval. This will allow us to submit our response to the grand jury report to the Superior Court Judge Barry T. La Barbera, and that will be by deadline of September 24th, 2012. I also want you to know that the county board, county superintendent of schools, is interested in providing a cover sheet in response to the grand jury's findings, and feels that the cover sheet should go along with our response, so that the Superior Court judge can see that we in fact have been harmed by situations beyond our control in many cases. So the analysis. My analysis that I'm sharing. The grand jury is recommending that elected boards maintain and pursue professional development, especially in the areas of budget policy and financial oversight. Given this, I would suggest that our governing board maintain its ongoing practice of professional development through attendance at one or more of the following: annual CSBA conference, school finance trainings, state or national professional development focused on best practices, etc. It is also important to continue our current practice of participating in and supporting local training opportunities that are provided. It is my suggestion that each board member contact the superintendent's assistant, Kim Holmes, to schedule participation in their preferred choice of professional development. An annual budget allocation could be provided to reimburse these costs. Our current Board Bylaw 9240 supports this recommendation. In other words, I believe San Luis Coastal has done a phenomenal job of maintaining strong reserves, the best possible programs to support kids, a strong bottom line, even despite having to give back millions and millions of dollars in fair share contributions to the state on an annual basis. Given all these things, I believe that that we should continue our practice of maintaining professional development at the board level. Are there any questions?
I read the grand jury report, and I have to say their underlying premise as it relates to our school district is wrong. I also think they fundamentally misunderstand what the role of a trustee is. I'm not saying there isn't value in their recommendations, but they seem to link up deficit spending with board members not knowing what they're doing, and that's ridiculous, particularly in our case. And the other basic aid districts who are having the fair share of pain, which we find out about after we've already adopted our budget. The fact that the grand jury didn't understand that kind of interplay really bothers me. And frankly, I don't agree with any of their recommendations. That's not to say that it's bad to get training or anything, but we don't deficit spend because we don't understand the budget process. We understand it really well. And we also trust our professional administrators to take our inputs, come up with the budget assumptions, and then work through it with us. I think we do an excellent job. And, you know, with all due respect to some of our other districts, you know, I remember when COLAs were being passed on to the pay scale, you know, 10% COLA, put it on pay. And some of those decisions are being, the consequences are being reaped by these districts. Now, that's not to say that there aren't other influences that are affecting them. Certainly there are. So I guess I kind of resent being lumped in with everybody and have this expectation from the county COE that we make some unified response. I'm not sure how we, you know, I don't want to say get in bed, but how we align ourselves with some of the other districts to make some comprehensive response that we join in with others.
Yeah, I meant to say a common framework. I didn't mean a common response. Common framework.
So there would be like a cover sheet, and then we would. Okay.
Right. We would have absolute discretion over our own individual responses to the grand jury, which could include and should include many of your comments.
And maybe the grand jury members, I don't know if the grand jury that issued this report is still sitting or not, but maybe they could come to some school board meetings. So.
Thank you very much, Dr. Perry.
You're welcome. I
appreciate it. Next item on the agenda is approval of the 2013-2014 calendar, and I think this is... Oh. I recognize you.
Yes, back again. I'll be up here a lot tonight. Well, after approving the 12-13 calendar last year, I was very excited because it was smooth, things were great. And so myself, as well as a group from SLCTA and CSEA, as well as SEIU, got together to work on a new calendar. Kathy Lutendris helped me from Morro Bay High School. And a funny thing happened in 13-14, and that is Easter isn't until late April. And so it really threw everything into a wrench because we're used to having, not that we're a religious organization, because we're not, but it's our past practice to have our spring break time around that holiday. So we had the different unions kind of vote on some different calendar options to see where they wanted the holidays to lie and where they should go. And in fact, both CSEA and SEIU had to change some of their contract language to go into this calendar that basically was mutually approved by all of the unions as well as the principals and the district. And so that calendar is before you. And the main thing, well, it's on the agenda anyways if you didn't have it. But basically, the only main change is that instead of having two presidents, three-day weekends in March, we took one of those days and we put it in April, which goes along with the religious holiday, and spring break is not tied to that anymore. So that's the calendar that you have before you, 13-14. Our goal is to try to get the calendar out as soon as possible so that our parents and staff can plan for vacations and know what's happening. As well as, you know, the community sometimes is a big calendar for everyone. We tried to look at Cal Poly and Cuesta and different districts as well and looking at the calendar itself. So all of those things went into the decision, and it is before you. And so as soon as this is done, we will be starting up on the 14-15 calendar. Any questions?
Any questions from the board?
Are there plans for us to go to a two-year calendar? I thought there was some discussion about.
So this is for next year. So jumping ahead for next year, and then I would say my plan is that really soon we go off. We're going to go into a 14-15 calendar.
Okay, good. We're not going to wait for the entire cycle. Like, good.
Because of the change, and it was such a big change in what our past practice in terms of the calendar, we wanted to get everyone's vote, everyone's opinion, tie into it before we brought it to the board.
April the 18th in lieu of Lincoln's birthday, did you address that? We got distracted.
Basically the unions all got together, you know, in terms of because spring break is not tied to Easter. So, which was not part of our past practice, you know, I asked them where would you like your holidays to fall? And so all three unions through their votes, through their decisions, went ahead and changed that. And you'll see in the SEIU agreement, actually, they've changed it from being Good Friday to just spring holiday for now on. So that's something that should make this whole calendar process a lot easier in the future.
One quick question, Mr. Pinkerton. There was discussion over the last two calendars prior to this about the sort of missing the overlap with Cal Poly and their summer programs and Cuesta's summer programs. Mm-hmm. Does this alleviate that? Because it looks like it does.
Yes. So ending early, mm-hmm. having the early ending date in June provides for some break time between both. And we should realize that this year in this school year's calendar as well.
As well. Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Would like to remind the board that this is this section is both discussion and available for action. So if we feel like we want to take action on one of these or more items, we are more within our rights to go ahead and do that. So I'm going to get back.
Let's move approval. I would like to move approval of the 2013-2014 calendar.
Okay. I have a motion
as proposed.
I have a first and a second from Mr. Quisenberry and second from Mr. Millar. Is there any further discussion? Anybody from the public? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Anybody abstained? Okay. Then we're going ahead with this calendar. I'm going to try and get back to my board docs, but the next item will be approval of a job description coordinator for adult education program. And there he is again.
Back up. Well, we, through the board's decision back in the spring, we have made some changes in terms of our staffing with our adult ed program as well as just the adult ed program itself. And through those budget reductions that have been realized, we have really consolidated our adult education program. In the past, we had an actual director of adult education, and that administrator served as the adult education director, as well as last year anyways, as the principal of Pacific Beach High School. And so through that budget reduction, that position was eliminated. So what we've done is we've taken our deputy director of student support services, and he is now the PB principal, along with his duties, and Sally Ames, who is in charge of the parent participation program and really a huge part of the adult ed program, the day-to-day operations at the time, we've taken her, and this position would then create basically the administrative position for her to now take over the adult education program, and we would realize the cost savings of no longer having that director position, which is upwards to $100,000. In terms of savings for the district. And so Sally has worked diligently with Rick Robinette, with her staff, in consolidating the adult ed program. She basically was the one who went through this job description with us. And so this basically is, for the board to know, this is the job description of the coordinator, who is basically what we're looking at putting her at is the lowest level of our administrative schedule, which is the same as a dean, a high school dean. And so that is our recommendation.
Thank you very much for that. Are there any comments or questions from the board? I had one.
Okay.
As I read the job description, which I think is tremendous, and this is to beat my horse, I guess, and hopefully not a dead horse. I'm wondering if there's a way to include within this job description some type of wording that says annually conducts the strategic marketing plan to grow and possibly identify revenue-enhancing classes or programs. Is that...
If the board would like, absolutely. We can add that.
I can. Thank you. Is there any way that we can sort of work in here as either another item or as part of maybe number 10 that this person annually conducts a strategic marketing plan to grow and possibly identify revenue-enhancing classes? This is the
job description.
this would be the job description of the new...
It kind of fits under number two a little bit in terms of ascertains the needs of the adult community and organizes and administers an adult education program designed to meet the needs.
Right.
But I think if we put the marketing
and enhancing
language in there,
yeah,
we can absolutely add that.
I would be more than willing to accept that.
I'm just a little unclear. So the idea is that this person would also investigate grants or just the types of classes that would pay for themselves and pay for the supplies in the classes, or what do you have in mind?
Yep, good question. Thank you for helping me clarify. This would not necessarily create a grant writing situation. I'm not sure that's out of line with it, but what I'm looking for is suggesting that this person be actively marketing the programs that we have, but also looking for programs. I'm just going to go to the tech area, looking for programs that would maybe be a possibility for reentry for those that are possibly unemployed in our community or need to get enhance their skills, and to work to identify those through a marketing plan.
Okay. I think those are good ideas, and I'm not opposed to them or the implementation of them. I think it is a slippery slope that we begin to slide down when the board begins to create job descriptions. That's an administrative function, or it always has been an administrative function. So for the precedent-setting aspect of it, I just wonder if that's not something that we would want to consider.
I kind of agree with Marilyn's statement. I think they're laudable objectives, but I would rather see it being done at an administration level rather than down at the, what are we calling this person, director?
Sally. Coordinator.
Sally. Thank you, Marilyn. The coordinator level. It just seems to me that it is a broader function and would benefit other programs within the district by carrying out similar things that you're suggesting, including classes at the other high schools, et cetera.
I will tell you that Sally, I mean, it's right up Sally's alley. She's working on that. What you're talking about, she's working on. She's talked about it in terms of from grants to marketing to having classes that pay for themselves, and she's doing those things. And so it definitely will be something that will go along with her position.
Okay.
Maybe what I could suggest is that we direct our superintendent to have those kinds of functions as a priority and let him and staff figure out where it's best to repose the responsibility.
I appreciate that very much. That's a great idea. So I'm going to look over at staff at that.
I understand. I got it.
Go, Sally.
Thank the board very much. Next, we're going to be looking at...
So we need approval.
We can move. Mr. Quesenberry. Is there any further discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
And anyone opposed? And does anybody abstain? Okay, thank you very much.
And we are very fortunate that Sally Ames is our coordinator of adult education. She's doing a fantastic job. Thank you.
The official closing of the curtains, which with my hearing aids was just wonderful. Mr. Pinkerton, I think you might want to stand back up. Yes, thank you.
Okay. The description of this agenda item, for many years the duties related to processing employee benefits were assigned to an account clerk in the fiscal services offices. And in June 2008, the account clerk position was eliminated and the duties were assigned to a senior secretary clerk in that fiscal services office. In March 2011,
The position was eliminated, and the duties were transferred to my office, to the personnel office. And for the past year, those duties were too much for Nancy Kundi, who was a classified personnel analyst in my office. And so the receptionist in my office started doing a lot of those employee benefits. And so with those duties, we asked the personnel commission to do a classification study. And we actually looked at all three receptionists that we have in the district. And based on that classification study and the personnel commission, they have basically recommended a reclassification for that position in the personnel office from a receptionist to a senior secretary clerk. And so what I bring before you today is basically for you to possibly approve that move as well as the budget that goes along with it.
And this, the salary and benefits cost that's listed there, is that's
$3,467 for the year.
Just want to make sure.
So is the practical effect going to be that the receptionist in your office who's taken on these duties is going to be now become a senior secretary clerk?
Yes.
So the fiscal impact. Because
the increase in her salary from a receptionist to a senior secretary clerk would be that amount.
Would be that amount, okay.
Any other discussion from the board? Is the board hear a motion or we?
I'll move approval of the.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Nope. No. Anyone opposed? I can't. Yeah. And anybody abstaining? I'm not sure. We're good. Yeah. So, the board has approved the Personnel Commission's recommendation. Moving on to 10.05, the consolidated app for funding on categorical funding. I believe, Rita, are you up?
I am. Thank you. Every year, we apply for state and federal funding through our district submission of this consolidated application, Part 1. In the packet you received, we provided a description of those categorical programs as well as an estimate of the funding amounts. The application itself has several sections. One that addresses private school participation, another that speaks to our assurances where we basically state that in accepting this money, we will follow all of the regulations that are associated with that program. We also provide information about how we have used some of these funds or how we plan to use them. And then finally, towards the end, there's a lot of student data, and that data actually helps us to determine how we will allocate some of these funds to our schools. So tonight, we're basically seeking your approval to submit our application.
Are there any questions or comments from the board? Okay, seeing none. So any further discussion and any discussion from the public? Okay, if not, we'll bring it back to the board. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Oh, aye. Sorry. My bad. Parking out of school.
Any of those opposed? And are there any abstentions? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rita.
Okay.
Well, I'm just realizing this is not on the agenda, but we are all experiencing some technical difficulties using our electronic media to utilize the agenda for this board meeting. So I would apologize for appearing to be distracted, and hopefully we can resolve the issues and things will move more smoothly in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, and I appreciate your mentioning it as I stumble along over here. So, thank you. So we are now up to approval of the secondary district plan and application for work experience program, which I think I recognize you, Rita.
Yes. It's been about 20 years since we've updated this application, and so we were notified by the state that we should go ahead and do this. It wasn't, you know, our fault. They just notify us whenever they want us to update the application. And so they notified us, and it was actually very timely because this year in December, we're going to go through a state review, a federal program monitoring review. And career technical education is one of those areas that will be reviewed, and work experience falls under that. So it's a good time for us to re-experience teachers in a discussion about the various program components in order to make sure everybody was aligned with what we were supposed to be doing, and also to identify any areas of need. So having completed this application, what we are requesting this evening is your approval to submit this application to the state.
Any questions from the board? Okay. And any questions from the public? And I'll bring it back in just a second. Seeing none from the public, Mr. Quisenberry?
It is Dr. Delkiskamp now, isn't it? Is that correct? My is a kind of a general question. So you've updated this and you've gone through it. Has it changed the class size or the student ratio to the coordinator at all? I was looking here, I think it was 125 students.
Mm-hmm. I would have to check to see.
Okay.
Updating this application doesn't necessarily affect that. What we
okay.
mainly did was to check our course outline to make sure it was still in alignment.
Mm-hmm.
We did update the work experience education training agreement. The state actually provided a nice template for us, and we found, I think, one or two areas that we didn't have previously, so we added those. We updated who the people are. There's been a change at Morro Bay in terms of the teacher in charge. And then one of the areas that we found where we maybe needed to do something was in providing some professional development for these teachers. And so we already have information about an appropriate conference.
As I was looking at the item, and I can't get to it right now, there were three sections that we could tick off, and one of them, I think, was exploratory, if I have that correctly. And I was wondering if you could explain, I guess, why we didn't check off exploratory, because it sounds maybe like a fun way to deal with this.
It's actually part of the application. It speaks to, it says students enrolled in exploratory work experience may be 12 years of age and in the middle school. So it's more of a middle school program. We have not had that in place in the past, and we weren't prepared at this time to put it in place and mark it on this application.
Then just one other quick one, because I may have missed this in here, and that this is a grant application. Does this bring cash with it, or do we just fill out paperwork?
It's partly a compliance issue because there are rules and regulations that go with running a work experience program, and so they want to see how we implement the program in our district.
Any other questions? Okay. Would it help you if
it were approved and we could submit it? It would be a great help.
Okay. So...
I'll move approval of the secondary district plan and application for work experience education, parenthetical, WE program.
Kind of work experience programs and technical vocation education, VocTech, will be the college path of the future as we're seeing the effects of student loan debt and stuff. So good work. Keep it up.
Thank you very much. I think we're moving on now to 10.7, proposed revisions to the board bylaw 9230. This will be presented by Dr. Prayer.
Yes, this is meant sort of as an opportunity for the board to weigh in on the more recent summer practice of beginning our general session board meeting at 6 p.m. instead of 7 p.m. And in order for that to happen, if that's the choice the board would like to move towards, we would need to make that adjustment in the board bylaw 9320. So I have this here today to allow the board opportunity to weigh in on that practice. Typically, closed session is anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, typically. So closed session would begin typically at 5, which could make it difficult for those that work. But I wanted to put it out there for discussion.
Comments from the board. Mr. Millar.
Have you had input, opportunity to get input from Mr. Unger and Catherine on this, Chris and Catherine? Because they're, I mean, I'm fine with it. I just don't know how other people's work schedules and things are.
Well, I have spoken to Mr. Unger about it, and he was the one that actually would prefer an earlier start.
Time we have, I would really hate for to institute a board policy that would discourage people from participating in the board, either as running for election as a trustee or adequately serving. So as we're aware and cognizant of other trustees who may have jobs that require attention up until 5 o'clock, sometimes I'm very fortunate to have employers who will be flexible as much as possible, but I just don't want this to create a situation that would be possibly become exclusionary for others who may wish to perform this valuable service at some time. So that's my 2 cents.
Yeah, I agree with Mrs. Sheffer. I would hate to see people who work traditional 9-to-5 jobs precluded from board service because their employer either cannot or is unable to accommodate leaving early to attend closed session at 5 o'clock. Currently, we have a board that has a tremendous amount of flexibility, but there have been times when we've had more people who are working traditional jobs. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to really be mindful of the limitations that are placed on them. And my fellow board members are, I'd like to hear them.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with both Ellen's concern and Marilyn's. Mrs. Sheffer and Mrs. Rogers. I think that the 7 o'clock start time for the meeting is better, especially with people when we're not in their area. If there's a board meeting at the coast and people from San Luis, the town, want to come out there, there's a commute issue, and it's certainly a commute issue for people from the coast getting to the board meetings. It used to be a lot faster to get through San Luis than it is in the last 10 years or so. So I have some concerns about this. I'm not sure that this is the direction we ought to go.
Any other comments?
I probably have one of the more flexible schedules, so I would be content with however the board wants to proceed on this.
Get that. I, too, have a fairly flexible schedule right now, and I'm open to the very open to the concept of having making this available to everybody and not just people with special schedules. What I'm wondering is, as a board, do we need to bring this back when we have the full board here and have another discussion, if that's okay with everybody? Okay. So, okay. The staff? Just bring it back as a second reading.
Table it for a second reading for September 4th. That sounds like a good plan.
All right. Thank you, everybody. So we're now looking at item 10.10
to the discussion of the board start time, but Mrs. Roger, the Giants are ahead 2-0, I believe, right now. We have 5 board policies in front of us tonight, and we'll obviously take them one at a time. 4 are for our revisions. One is a new policy. Three out of the five have some pretty simple language having to do with just the current nomenclature we're supposed to use for non-discrimination policies. And these are all first readings, so we can certainly revisit them if there are other revisions or questions or research that we need to do. The first one is Board Policy 0410, non-discrimination in district programs and activities. There are basically three sections that I'd kind of highlight here, and one of them is a section we'll be highlighting other times, which is to make sure that we have our kind of boilerplate language for non-discrimination in programs, activities, and practice, making sure we include specifically the terms gender identity, gender expression, and genetic information in our non-discrimination clauses. The second revision, if you were to scroll down a little bit, I'm not sure we're looking at these right now, but in the middle of it, there's a new section about the district's non-discrimination policy and related informational materials shall be published in a format that parents and guardians can understand and when required by law in a language other than English. That is to go along with Ed Code 48985. So that's just that language to follow that. And then lastly, towards the bottom of...
Any board members with... Thank you, Mr. Millar.
I don't have any questions, but I like that presentation. It makes it a lot simpler for you when you guys can, when you zero in to the changes specifically.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Holmes.
Should have known. But I don't think there's anything. This is basically bringing in a compliance with CSBA
recommendations.
I would move approval of board policy revision BP0410.
And I'll second.
We have a first and a second. Go out to the public. Are there any public comment? All right. Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Is there any comment? Any further discussion? Okay, we have a first and a second. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? And Mrs. Rogers, anybody abstain? I'm just thanking you for teaching me. Moving on to 10.09, Mr. Robinette.
Yes, this is a new board policy, so this may take a little more to explain. This is a, again, this is language from CSBA, and the topic is district-sponsored social media. I'll kind of walk through the sections of it briefly so you kind of understand how it's laid out. First of all, that first paragraph basically talks about this is a statement of value that the purpose of having, of using technological social media platforms is for community involvement and communication. Paragraph two goes into a definition of what we mean by social media, and obviously this is a definition that would ARs for this, you know, that we will adjust depending on any board direction. And it also, in that section, clarifies that the use of social media is not a guarantee of free speech, or it does not create a limited public forum. It would act as many other situations in a school district would as a non-public forum, where the courts grant latitude for us to be able to monitor the comments on the social media platform. If you were to go down to paragraphs 5 and 6, it basically is talking about the monitoring of the site, and the fact that we would be looking to make sure there's nothing obscene or libelous or insightful in these sites. At the bottom of the that first page, it clarifies that we would be following our employee and student responsible use policy in terms of the employee's use of social media and student use of the social media sites. And then on the second page of the proposed board policy, the last four paragraphs all deal with privacy matters, that there are always the possibilities of these being accessed as a public record, that we would be doing our best to ensure privacy rights, not willfully disclosing information we're not supposed to, not using social media platforms for any privacy or confidential matters. And with that's kind of the outline of the social media board policy, and
certainly available for questions and discussion.
Thanks, Rick. Are there any questions from the board? I'm looking at Mr. Millar first, please.
First of all, I'm not sure I agree with him, so that we don't have an inadvertent disclosure of student data.
Well, yeah, I think we have to monitor it the way we'd monitor anything we're doing with electronic email, even. Yeah. But yeah, this does put things a little more out there. Right now we have conduits, so all of our right. You know, Facebook accounts are kind of coming through the district office. This policy would open it up to more school use, and we'd have to be very careful about that.
Okay. And I'm not familiar with this. However, in my work, I have started realizing the rich amount of information that people throw out there about themselves. And I, not that I'm using it for improper purposes, I'm not. But I guess that's my concern. It's, and again, maybe it's my, dinosaur brain, but it just seems like that once you put things out there on these social media platforms, the users can do all sorts of other things with it.
Yeah, we have the ability in any of these platforms to control what is posted. So we're controlling our own posted content. We would have the ability to control responses to that are made public also. So it's a limited platform.
Yeah, I guess following up on that, Walt, is, the monitoring, so that was a question I had. But I think that we need to realize to some extent that we can control what is posted and we can control responses to that are made through those we, as a district, really have. And it actually isn't that much. I mean, we have control initially about what goes up, and we have control about how to change that. But if someone goes in and pulls off information and puts it someplace else and responds to it or uses it in some manner, we just don't have control over that. So I think there's an awareness that we all need to have, and the public needs to have, that there's only so much final say. We can be gatekeepers up to a very limited point, and then it's just out there in cyberspace for all to have and use and manipulate and come back with and do with as they will.
Thank you. Mrs. Rogers.
Thank you. I am noting that this is the only new board policy. The others are all revisions to existing policies, and I feel comfortable with going forward on revisions, but in adopting a whole new board policy, I would really welcome the input of our absent board members, Mr. Unger and Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. So perhaps my feeling would be to table this for a second reading.
Okay.
It's not time sensitive, so we can certainly do that.
Okay. So I don't have to get my grandkids' pictures ready to go up on Facebook.
Yeah, we have a Facebook page. Or we have a Twitter account. We're using My Big Campus, and I think the intent is to make sure we have policy and regulations to help us with that. But it's certainly not a time-sensitive, and they would welcome more input.
Or it goes beyond just getting suspended from school or having your laptop taken away. And actually, there's some fairly strong legal consequences for misuse of especially in terms of cyberbullying.
So perhaps a statement about the potential for other legal or civil issues.
As I've just learned tonight from Mr. Millar, it's best to let you guys do it. I'm just going to see if I can suggest that you take a look at it.
Certainly.
Yeah. Trying to get back into the agenda here. So we've looked at 10.10, and I'm guessing that's probably you again.
Yes, three more to go. Okay, board policy 1250 is under the community relations banner once again, and this has to do with visitors. This is to align our current policy with current penal code, which is a statement at the very bottom of this policy, a new statement. And again, this is CSBA recommendation. which basically requires anybody who is a registered sex offender, and this would, this is the change has to do more with misdemeanor, registered sex offenders than felony offenders, that they must request written permission from a principal before entering school grounds or premises. Our protocols are that our principals contact law enforcement to find out what type of admissibility those individuals would have. So that is basically putting that statement in there to coincide with the law that somebody who is on the sex offender database must check in before, must request permission to come onto a campus from having to check in. Typically, people on the felony list can't even come close to a school, have a boundary that they can even be around.
Okay, that has come up with parents and guardians, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
At our school sites.
Absolutely.
So people convicted of, a sexually related felony and a parent or a guardian would under no circumstances be able to...
Not necessarily. We cooperate with law enforcement. So we have had situations where somebody who is on a... before this law, on a criminal list, we get our permission from law enforcement to attend things such as a parent conference a back-to-school night. But that has to be, we seek permission before any of those are granted. And obviously, with any of these situations, if somebody was to be in a situation alone with students, they require fingerprinting clearance, which would not pass a muster for fingerprint clearance for any of these individuals.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the board?
I do. I mean, a question. So a 290 registrant misdemeanor when on probation is, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to think about is how does this go into effect? Is a 290 registrant aware that they...
That's my understanding. My understanding is they have the awareness that they may not enter a school premise without that permission.
Okay. And this just conforms our process to that. Okay. Thank you.
To Board Policy 1250, Community Relations, Visitors/Outsiders, as presented.
All right. Getting towards that.
The next two are very easy.
Okay.
So Board Policy 1312.3, which is our uniform complaint procedures. There's actually two minor changes, but the substantial one is in the second paragraph, once again adding the pertinent non-discrimination language to include genetic information, gender expression, and gender identity into this policy. And at the bottom of it, too, which is something we do anyway, but I guess we're supposed to put it in there, that people can have access to our uniform complaint procedures free of charge. So those are the only changes to this policy.
So do I have any questions from the public? Seeing none, any questions from the board?
No.
All right.
I would move approval of Board Policy 1312.3, Uniform Complaint Procedures.
Again, putting the language of genetic information, gender expression, and gender identity into our non-discrimination in employment policy. And that is the only change.
So, thank you. Any questions from the public? Okay, bringing it back. Any questions from the board? All right.
Okay, I'll move approval of the proposed revisions to Board Policy 4030, Personnel Non-Discrimination in Employment.
Thank you. I have a second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Sheffer. I have first from Mrs. Rogers and a second from Mrs. Sheffer. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being up there that long. Maybe next meeting go for 7? Okay. We're now turned to the action and consent. I'm going to read these off. If there's anybody that wants to, if anybody wants to pull one of these items, if you'll just let me know, I would appreciate it. 11.01, approval of certificate and classified personnel items. 11.02, approval of the 2012-2013 agreement with SEIU. 11.03, disposition of surplus property. 11.04, acceptance of donations. I'd like to pull that one. 11.05, approval of furniture and equipment requests. And 11.07, approval of warrants. 11.08, approval of submitting the 2012-2013 moral. 11.12, denial of claim.
Pull, please.
Pull 11.11.
11.12.
And pull 11.12, denial of claim against the district Culpepper. So I would entertain a motion on, oh boy, here we go again, point 1, point 2, point 3, point 5, point 6, point 7, point 8, point 9, point 10, and point 11.
I'll move approval. Of
you got to do all the numbers. No.
So, I so move. Yeah, yeah.
I so second. Okay, I have a first and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, we have approval on all those numbers. Marilyn, if you'd like to go first, on you pulled number 11.12.
Yes, I did. I believe that this denial of claim against the district in the matter of Culpepper is a work in progress, and so it's something we'd like to review at the next meeting.
Yeah, staff would recommend that we hold this claim for future developments. We have some technical issues to resolve, so we'll bring it back at a later time. You don't need to take any action on it. It's just polled. It hasn't been approved, so... what you want to do now is vote on your other ones. Did you already vote on those? Okay.
Okay.
Through district. So I will make a motion to approve 11.04.
And I'll second.
Thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Mission passes. Okay, moving on now to informational and board reports. I just wanted to mention that during this informational board report section, if there are questions that you would like to ask of staff to bring back information, this would be an appropriate time to do that. So do any of the board members have reports that they'd like to make or questions that they'd like to bring before staff?
This is just a comment on the opening day, and I stayed for a little while longer and listened to the presentation. I forget the speaker's name, but Lynn Swanson,
Lynn Sawyer.
Thank you. Sawyer?
Sawyer.
Sawyer, thank you. And it allayed some of my concerns, and I had some conversations with some of the teachers there, especially those that had worked on the new evaluation process, and they seemed to feel very positive about it, so I just wanted to make that observation.
Mrs. Rogers.
Okay, and I have two items. I'll observe on the flip side that I showed up by accident a week early for the kickoff gala. So I had the opportunity to sit in on the administrative or a couple of hours of the administrative workshop having to do with the teacher evaluation tool, and I was impressed by the depth and the side of the creation committee. I heard from some of the people on the administrative end of it, and it, on the whole, it seems to be being very well received. That's my first point. My second point is that I did miss both meetings in June because I was on a seven-week cross-country trip with my husband in a Ford Focus wagon. And I had intended to bring 3 or 4 hours of slides, but unfortunately I forgot. But due to technical difficulties, I will not be able to present them to you. So I do apologize for missing both June meetings. It probably will happen once every 30 years, and I'm glad to be back, and I thank you for your forbearance with me.
Well, we're very glad to have you back. Very helpful. I too was able to attend the big back-to-school event. I was impressed with the number of an amount of staff that were there. The special guest was former State Superintendent of Schools Jack O'Connell, and I have to say, after he listed all of the accomplishments of this district, I was extremely proud to be sitting as a board member on this board. And after hearing Dr. Prater's comments, I went out and bought daffodil bulbs, and we'll explain that at a future time. So, if there's no other business that comes before the board, I would recognize a motion for adjournment.
Okay. I move we adjourn.
Walter, thank you very much.
I want to help out.
Thank you very much.